The 13th Candle by Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 4. The author sat in his office and grinned a grin of great appreciation. It was not an office, really, but a most uncomfortable metal bed with no springs. One of those things that went up or down at the touch of a button, and then, when the button was at its highest, the electricity would be cut somewhere. But it was the only office the author possessed. Now he sat in his office, such as it was, and grinned with sheer pleasure. Mr. Harold Wilson, the former Prime Minister of England, was reported on the Canadian radio as having said his piece about the press. His remarks were to the effect that if the press could get hold of a story, they distorted it, and if they could not get hold of the story, they imagined it. Exactly. That is what the author has been saying for years, a lone voice crying out in the wilderness. The press, in the author's opinion, is foul. He always wondered how they got away with the idea that they were special. A few years ago, gossiping people were dunked in the village duck pond. Now, if a person has a yen for garbage, he joins the press as a reporter. The author, having bitter experience of the press, very firmly believed that the gang is the most evil force on the earth today, responsible for wars and strikes. However, the truth about the press is not popular with the publishers, so, as there is no opposition, the evil weed flourishes unchecked. The author sat in his office, the aforementioned bed, and contemplated his surroundings. A scruffy bed table bought about a hundredth hand from some local hospital, a beat-up old Japanese typewriter, and an even more beat-up old author, the latter falling apart at the seams. About 70 letters littered the bed. Fat Taddy, the Siamese, wallowed among them, every so often rolling on her back and kicking her legs in the air. "Shrimps, shrimps," she muttered. "Why don't we have shrimps, eh? That's what I want to know." Beautiful Cleopatra, her sister, sat beside the author, her arms folded, an enigmatic smile on her face. "Boss," she said suddenly, rising and flicking an imagined speck of dust from her tail, "boss, why don't you get in the wheelchair and we'll go out and watch the ships? It's dull in here, eh?" Just outside the window, the Polish liner, the Stefan Batory, was getting ready to sail. The Blue Peter, the blue flag with the white square in the center, had just been hoisted, and crowds were gathering, as is ever the case when a liner is about to sail. For several moments the author was tempted. "Ah, why not?" he thought, and then virtue triumphed again. Besides, he'd had an extra twinge of pain just then, so he remarked, "No, Clee, we've got work to do. We have to put some words on paper to pay for those shrimps that Taddy is still groaning about." Miss Cleo yawned and leaped lightly to the floor and sauntered off. Miss Taddy gave a final roll and kick and followed. The author gave a sigh that almost blew all the letters off his bed and reached for a handful. One letter fell open. "How is it," the writer thundered, "that you dare to say you will not answer letters unless money for postage is enclosed. Don't you know that people do you an honor when they spend their money and time in writing to you? You have a duty to reply to all letters and give all the information asked for. Well, tisk tisk, thought the author. There's one biddy who's going to get a surprise. The typewriter was a heavy old thing, knee cracking when endured for too long, but the author had no sylph-like figure, and although he had slimmed from a modest 280-something pounds, 215 was the rock-bottom limit, even on a 1,000-calorie-a-day diet. The problem was his bay window just too bay, or were his arms too short? Secretary? No, ma'am. No, sir. No secretary. And the only authors who write pornographic stuff make enough to pay for a secretary. So, our author glumly grabbed the old typewriter and dragged the wretched thing on his knees. Dear Miss Bugsbottom, the keys clattered, your kind letter has been received, but not well received. May I take the opportunity to put you straight, or wise you up, as the Americans say? My mail is going up, Miss Bugsbottom. And so are the mail charges. Now, the cost in time and material is now calculated as being more than $3 to send out one single page letter. Contrary to your assumption, I do not get a dollar on each book sold. I receive from 7 to 10% of the lowest price in the country in which the book is printed. The author snorted and fumed with indignation. From this, I may have to pay the first publisher's 50%. Don't ask me why. And then there are other commissions to pay, losses on currency conversion, and tax. So, Miss Bugsbottom, you really do not know what you are writing about? Ah, yes, an author has to eat as well, you know. Rab came in. Mail has come, she said. Only 63 today. Must be held up somewhere. Reminded the tattered author of another letter he had tucked away. He fished in the first pile and came up with a gaudy orange sheet with some quite improbable flowers printed all around the edges. Ah, here it is, he said. Unfolding it, he read, you say you are a monk. How is it, then, that there is a Mrs.? Some monk, eh? How are you going to explain that? The poor author sighed anew in his exasperation. What queer things people are, he thought, but the answer, typed, might help someone. Ladies and gentlemen, have you ever heard of a nunnery where there has been a priest? Have you ever heard of a community where a man can live with a woman and with women? They are not always doing the things which the prurient think they will be doing. Have you ever heard of a prison, for example, which has a female nurse? And come to that, have you ever heard of a solitary night nurse on a men's ward? Come, come. In the better communities, men and women are not always jumping into bed together. Oh, naughty, naughty, what thoughts people have. The same esteemed correspondent, esteemed should be reversed, also went on to write, and why do you wear a beard? to hide a funny mouth or something. But the great public would be amazed if they knew the rot which the component parts making up the great public wrote. Here's an actual extract. No, the whole letter which was received from one peculiar person. It is absolutely true and unaltered. Dear Sir, I must be free. Free to live my own life without being ordered about by others. I must be free, or my soul will die. Send me $1,000,000 by return. Signed, so-and-so. P.S. Thanks in advance. The author, having typed it from the original, turned it over and over in his hands. Some of the letters were funny. He sighed again, probably lack of oxygen from the stale, polluted air of the city, and tossed the letter into the garbage bin. Phew! You can say that again, muttered Fat Tatty, as she sauntered in. But life and letters move on. More about homosexuals. What a furor. Some people opposed to them would completely spoil their fun with their sharp knives. But here is something about the distaff side of it. The underground bar in the wilder reaches of Soho, London, where anything goes, was almost empty. A thuggish-looking bartender was leaning up against the far wall of his domain, idly picking his teeth and thinking of nothing in particular. At the distal end of the bar sat two people on high stools and muttered low in conversation about low subjects, waist-high subjects. Lotta Bull was the epitome of the masculine woman, lacking only certain essential attachments to make her a complete man. Her hair was clipped short in almost military fashion. Her hard face would have been an asset to a sergeant major in a tantrum. Her dress was the most unisex of unisex, and her voice was as deep as the voices of the ships in the Pool of London. She cast a proprietary eye on the girl before her. Rosy Hips was all feminine, fluff and froth, with hardly a thought in her vapid blonde head. With the blue eyes and curls of a china doll, she gave an impression of demure innocence. Rosy Hips was curved as Lotta Bull was straight. Rosy delicately dangled a cigarette in a very long holder. Lotta chewed on the end of one of those small cheroots. A customer entered the bar and stood for a moment gazing around. Spotting Rosy Hips, he started in her direction, but changed course abruptly in midstream at the sight of Lotta Bull's fierce glare. Discreetly, he moved off in the direction of the barkeep, now straightened up and polishing glasses. "Let that doll alone," whispered the barkeep, "or her butch will do ya. She's a wild one, that Lotta Bull. What'll ya have?" "Men, that's all they think about," snorted Lotta. "I'd kill the man who approached me the wrong way. Women is my meat. Cleaner, cleaner. Have you ever had a man, Rosy?" Rosy smiled and then laughed outright at her private thoughts. "Let's go somewhere," she said. "This is no place to talk." Quickly, they emptied their glasses and sauntered out into the street. "Let's get a taxi," she said. A quick flick of her hand and Lotta Bull had a London taxi turn in its own length of the street and come to a halt beside them. The driver watched them get in, pushed down his fare flag, and nodded knowingly as Lotta gave the address in an obscure street in Paddington, just by the backside of the hospital. Traffic was light for London at this time of the evening. Office workers had gone home, shops were closed, and it was yet too early for the cinema and theater crowds. The taxi sped along, avoiding the lumbering red buses, passing the familiar Green Line vehicles, also on their hurried journeys, from and to the country beyond the city. The taxi swung around a corner and came to a gentle halt. Lotta Bull peered at the fare meter and fumbled in her purse before paying. "Thanks a lot, sir," said the taxi driver. "Have a good trip." With the familiarity of long practice, he meshed gears and sped off down the road in search of the next fare. Lotta Bull stomped stolidly across the sidewalk. Rosy Hips teetered along after her, on heels so high that everything shook and bounced in the right places. Sundry men of all ages abroad in the street did a swivel head turn and whistled appreciatively, drawing frosty stares from Lotta. The key grated in the lock, and with an almost inaudible snick, the door swung open. Lotta fumbled for the light switch, and the entrance room was flooded with light. They entered, and the door swung shut behind them. "Ah," breathed Rosy Hips, as she sank gratefully into a low chair and pulled off her shoes. "My feet are killing me." Lotta swung into the kitchen and plugged in the electric kettle. "A cup of char, that's what I want," she said. "I'm dry as a bone." The tea was hot, the cakes pleasant. Together they sat on the antique from Liberty's love seat, and with a low table before them. "You were going to tell me, Rosy, about this first man of yours," said Lotta, reaching out a foot and pushing away the table. She swung her shoeless feet onto the love seat and pulled Rosy down beside her. Rosy laughed, and she said, "Quite the damnedest thing, really. That was a few years ago. I didn't know the difference between a boy and a girl then. I didn't know there was a difference. Mom was very strict. So I was going to Sunday school in those days. I was about 16, I guess. The teacher was a young fellow, maybe 20 years of age. He seemed friendly, and I was flattered. Got a nice little Vauxhall car, too, so he must have been well off, I thought." She stopped to light a cigarette and blew a cloud of smoke into the air. "Many times after Sunday school, he wanted to drive me home, but I always said no, as Mum was so strict. So he suggested driving me and dropping me off at the end of our street. I said yes and got in the car. All green it was. Very nice car, too. Well, he took me home several times, and once we stopped in the park. We lived in Wandsworth then. He seemed to have difficulty with his breathing or something, and I did not know a thing he was talking about, and as his hands were so busy, I thought he was wanting a fight or something. Poor fool that I was. And then a policeman on a horse came round the corner, and the fellow just jammed into gears, and we took off like scared rabbits." She fiddled with her cigarette and mashed it in the ashtray. For a few moments there was silence, broken at last by Lotta Bull, saying, "Well, what then?" Rosy Hips heaved such a sigh that she almost popped over the top, and then continued, "Mum was such a prude. There was no man ever in the house. Dad had been killed in an accident soon after I was born. I had no male relatives at all, and no pets, nothing. The birds and the bees lark was lost on me. Oh, sure, at school we girls fooled around together, as girls will. We explored every avenue, as the politicians say, but boys, no. There was a bit of talk about them, but the remarks were quite beyond my understanding. I knew there were Christians, and I knew there were Jews, and I thought that the difference between boys and girls was much about the same. One went to a different church or something different, maybe a school." She paused to light a fresh cigarette, coughing quite a bit as she drew breath at the wrong moment. Lotta Bull sat up to pour herself a fresh cup of tea and downed the tepid stuff in one mighty swallow. She lay back and put her arms around Rosie. "Yes?" she inquired, running her hands up and down as if she was practicing the violin. "Well, how can you expect me to talk when you're doing that?" asked Rosie. "Wait until I've told you if you want to hear. You want your cake set to music or something?" Lotta put her arms around Rosie's waist again and said, "Oh, shucks, you got a dose of the innocence again. Talk." "Well," said Rosie, "I didn't see him at all until the next Sunday school. He looked a bit scared to me and whispered, 'Did you tell your mother?' So, of course, I told him no. I didn't tell her anything." He looked relieved, and then he went on teaching us the good word. And then he said that a man from the Band of Hope wanted to talk to us because we should sign the pledge to be good little teetotalers or something. Didn't mean a thing to me, as I never tasted the stuff. Outside, there was a mighty crash as two cars collided with a tinny jangle. Lotta Bull jumped up so violently that poor Rosie was tipped over onto the floor. Lotta rushed to the window and peered out at the scene below. Pedestrians standing gaping, two drivers shouting indecent imprecations at each other, and then the police. "Fuzz," gloomed Lotta. "Never could stand the fuzz. They always spoil everything. Come on, Rosie, get with it again." And they resumed their places on the love seat, so aptly named. And Rosie continued, "After Sunday school, I was going home when he drove up beside me and he opened the car door. I got in and he drove off, and we went along to Putney and sat in the car by the side of the river. Of course, there was a lot of people about, so we just sat and talked. He said a lot of things which I just did not understand, and then he said how silly I was to always go by what my mother told me. 'Come up to Maidenhead with me next Saturday,' he said. 'Tell your mother you're going out with a girlfriend. I know a nice little place, and we will have fun.' So I said I'd think about it, and then he drove me home after arranging to meet me after school on Friday. Mother was a perfect beast all that week. 'What is the matter with you, Rosie?' she kept on. 'At school, everything went wrong. My girlfriend, Millie Caudle, took a sudden hate to me. You know, one of those things that girls get. And life was perfectly miserable. I was one of those prefects, and the head bawled me out for not reporting various things which I had not even seen. And then, when I said I had not seen them, she told me I wasn't fit to be a prefect. Oh, it was a beastly week. Poor Rosie stopped and gasped with the indignation as all of the memories came flooding back. And then the headmistress asked me if I was having trouble or something. I said no, only the trouble she was giving me. And then she turned red and said she'd speak to my mother about my saucy manners. Oh, Lord, I thought now I'd had everything. But the week crawled, and I mean crawled. Lotta Bull nodded her head in sympathy. "Let's have a drink, eh, Rosie?" she asked, rising and going to the fitted bar in the corner of the room. "What'll you have? Scotch, gin and tonic, vodka?" "No, I'm in common today. Give me a Watney's," said Rosie. "All my hopes are on the beer now, so give me a beer." Together they sat on the love seat, Lotta with Scotch on the rocks, and Rosie with her Watney's. "Gee, you are interesting me," exclaimed Lotta. "Care to tell me the rest?" "Oh, so, on Friday morning before school," resumed Rosie, "Mum got a letter from the head, the old beast. And as Mum read, she turned a horrible purple. 'Rosie,' Mum yelled as she finished the letter. It must have been a corker. 'Rosie, you just wait until you come back from school. I'll lambast you. I'll take the hide off your back. You, she gasped and spluttered, and words failed her. I fled. At school that day, I was in trouble from start to finish. Everyone was livid at me." She paused to take a drink and to recollect her thoughts. "He was waiting just beyond the school gates. Boy, was I ever glad to see him. I ran to the car and jumped in. He drove away fast, and we parked further on down, you know, that little square, and I told him all my troubles. I told him I was afraid to go home. 'I tell you what,' he said at last, 'you write a note to your mother, and I will get a boy to deliver it. Say you're spending the night with your girlfriend, Molly Cottle.' So I tore a page out of my exercise book and I scribbled the note." Lotta nodded her head avidly. "Soon after, he had got a boy on a bicycle to deliver the note, and we were speeding up the road towards Maidenhead. On the outskirts, there was a nice little place, you know, cabins. Bit of a restaurant there, too. He booked a room for us, and then we went in and had a meal. It was about time, too. I was absolutely starved. My mum had been going on at me so that I just missed my breakfast in order to get away from the racket. I mean, one just can't eat when another person is screaming at one. And then you know what school meals are. School dinners are something to be forgotten, if at all possible." She tossed her head and winkled her nose at the mere thought. "Yeah," muttered Lotta Bull sourly, "but you should see what they gave us in the reformatory. But go on." "So I was truly famished," resumed Rosy Hips. "I ate everything I could, but he kept on talking. Not that I listened, I was too busy eating. Seemed to me he wanted to play around. Oh, what's it matter? I thought only the same thing as Molly Cottle and I do together. What if he is different from me in some strange way? Can't a Christian worship with a Jew? Oh, what an ignorant fool I was. She sat back and laughed ruefully at the memory, took a sip of her drink, and resumed her narrative. Well, I'd had a lot to eat and a lot to drink, tea, you know, and I looked around for the ladies and could not see it, so I said for us to go across the room. We went across the car park and into the room we had booked. The bathroom door was standing open, so I said I had to go in. Well, I was rather a long time, what with, you know, one thing and another, but at last I was finished in there, so I switched off the light and went into the bedroom. She stopped with a short, hard laugh. Lotta Bull was sitting there with her mouth slightly open. Taking a drink, she resumed. I turned around and there he was, my God. I've never had such a shock before. There he was, naked as the day he was born, but oh my God, he was all hairy, and he had a terrible growth thing sticking out. He's got a cancerous growth, I thought to myself. And then he moved towards me, and I slid to the floor in a dead faint. Must have caught my head really hard on the chair or something, because I really was knocked out. Lotta Bull was panting with emotion, and her eyes were beginning to look wild. Rosy Hips continued. After what seemed to be a very long time, I was aware of things again. There seemed to be a terrible weight thumping about on me. Oh, my God, I thought drowsily, an elephant is sitting on me. I opened my eyes and let out a screech of terror. He was lying on me, and I was half naked, too. Gee, he was hurting me. And then, you know, the damnedest thing, he jumped free of me and flapped down on his knees and started praying hard. And then there was the sound of running feet, a key was jammed in the door, and two men burst in, and all I was covered with was a blush of shame. Lotta Bull sat back with her eyes half closed, probably visualizing the scene, but Rosie went on. One of the men stared at me everywhere and said, "Heard you screech, miss. Was he raping you?" Without another word, they both rushed at the Sunday school teacher and kicked him hard in all sorts of places, and he just bellowed out prayers. "Better get your clothes on, miss," said one of the men. "We will call the cops." Oh, my God, I thought, what will happen now? I dashed into my clothes and was frightened to see that I had a lot of blood on my legs, but I had to dress. "What happened then? Did they get the police?" asked Lotta Bull. "They sure did," answered Rosie. "Better than anything on the telly. A police car rushed up, and then right behind there was some jerk from the press. He leered at me and licked his chops as he opened his notebook, and a policeman stopped him. 'Let her go,' he said. 'She may be underage.' So the jerk from the press did the eyeball ogle at the Sunday school teacher who was standing there like a peeled banana. The men would not let him dress until the police came. By now I understood the difference between a man and a woman. Outside, a newsboy was crying, 'Special! Crime of the century! Special!' 'That's what they do,' said Lotta Bull. 'The press get hold of some little incident and make a big thing out of it.' But what happened then?" "Well," said Rosy Hips, "the police asked a lot of questions. My, what a brouhaha there was. They asked me a lot of questions. Did I go into the room with him willingly? I said yes, but I didn't know then what he wanted. I said I did not know the difference between a man and a woman. They laughed like drains at that, and the pressman scribbled feverishly. I do now, I added, and he scribbled again. Suddenly the schoolteacher broke free and dropped to his knees, where he babbled out prayers by the bucketful, and then, good heavens, he rose to his feet and accused me of leading him on. I never felt so humiliated in my life.
Did they take you to the police station? Asked Lotta.
Yes, they did. I was put in the police car beside the driver and the other policeman, and the Sunday school teacher got the back, and we drove off to the Maidenhead police station. The press tagged on behind. By now there were 7 of them. At the police station I was rushed into a room, and a doctor and a woman police officer made me take off all my clothes. They spread my legs apart. My, was I ever embarrassed, and examined me. The doctor called out about marks and bruises and all of that, and the woman officer wrote it all down. And then the doctor stuck a tube thing up me and told me he was just drawing off a specimen to see if I had been raped. God, what else did he think had happened to me? She stopped and picked up the glass, which Lotta had just refilled. After a good drink, as if to wash away bad memories, she continued. After what seemed to be hours and hours, a man and a woman police took me home to Mum. Mum was white and stuttering with rage. She waved a paper with great big headlines which said that school girl ruins prominent Sunday school teacher. Mum was livid, and I mean livid. She told the police to take me off anywhere, but she'd finished with me, and the door slammed with a crash. The cop and the cop-ess looked at each other. The woman took me back to the police car, and the man stayed knocking at the door. Rosie stopped to light a cigarette and then went on. At last, the policeman came back and said that Mum had shut the door on me forever. He looked at me with some sympathy and said they'd have to take me to a Salvation Army home for wayward girls. Me! So to cut a long story short, I was lodged for the night in the awful old building that you know so well. Lotta Bull sniffed. Sure do, she remarked acidly. That's where I learned about the birds and the bees, and discovered that pot was not to sit on. But tell me the rest about you. Rosie Hips looked rather pleased at Lotta's sustained interest and went on with her story. That night I learned all about life, learned all about sex. Boy, oh boy, some of those girls were crazy. I mean crazy. The things they did to each other. But anyhow, even that endless night of hell passed, and in the morning I was given breakfast, which I couldn't eat. And then I was taken off to court, and I don't mean Buckingham Palace. She sat silent for a few moments, collecting her bitter thoughts. Then, lighting a fresh cigarette, she resumed her tale. The policewoman who came for me treated me as if I were a dangerous criminal. She sure was rough with me. I told her I was the injured one. "Says you," she replied. Well, after a very long wait, I was pushed into the courtroom.
Oh, it was awful. The press were there. Mom sat glowering at me, and they brought the Sunday school teacher and put him in the dock. I had to tell all. Some of the men were panting when I was asked, did I go willingly with him? I said I did, but I did not know what he wanted. Everybody guffawed. Oh, I can hardly bear to think about it even now. She stopped and dabbed at her eyes with a minute scrap of lace. But anyway, she continued, they said that I was of the age of consent, just over 16, and a pressman who had been doing a feature story of our school rushed to babble that he had seen me run to the car and jump in. There was no force used, he said, so they let off the Sunday school teacher with a warning to be a good boy in the future. My, he sure did beat it out of that court. She stopped and stubbed out her cigarette and took a drink. Then they started on me, she said. I was a bad, ungrateful, wicked girl. Even my poor, long-suffering, widowed mother, who had been working her fingers to the bone for me for 16 years, had got sickened by me and had turned me out, rejected me, and wanted nothing more to do with me. So the court had to do something about it to save my soul. Then a probation officer or something clattered to her hind legs and said her piece. The old boy, trying a case, fiddled with his glasses, consulted a book or two, and then said I would have to go to a school for wayward girls for 2 years. Lotta Bull nodded in mute sympathy. Rosie continued, well, that just broke me up. I mean, I hadn't done anything. So I told them what happened just as calmly as I could, as I wanted to make the record clear. The old boy said I was a very rude girl and most ungrateful. Next case, he called, and I was hustled away to a cell. Some old geezer thrust a sandwich in my shaking hand, and someone else pushed a great thick mug of cold tea at me. Of course I couldn't touch the stuff. Just like when they got me, said Laudable. But go on. Rosie drew a deep breath and said, then some woman came in and told me that I could not go to the school today and I should just have to spend the night in Holloway Prison. Just imagine me in Holloway. And I really hadn't done a thing. But they took me there in a black Mariah. It was awful. I never felt so alone in my life. She stopped and shuddered and then said simply, and that's how it was with me. Lotta Bull moved a cushion and a book fell to the floor with a soft plop. She moved a long arm and picked it up. Rosie looked at the cover and smiled with interest. Quite a good book, said Lotta. Wait a moment, she fumbled at the pages. Read this. He writes quite a bit about homos and lesbians. You should read it. I agree with every word of it. Rosie Hips laughed with considerable affection. Read it, she said. I have all the books he has written, and I know every one of them to be true. I write to him, you know. Lotta Bull laughed. Ah, go on, she said. He's a hermitist, hermit of them all. How could you know him? Rosie smiled a secret smile and said, he helped me a lot. He helped me when I thought I was going mad. That's how I know him. She fished in her handbag and eventually produced a letter. This is from him, she said, as she passed it to Lotta.
Lotta read and nodded her approval.
"What is he really like?" she asked.
"Oh, a bit of a square," answered Rosie. "Like, he doesn't drink or smoke. Women are just abstract concepts to him, just as well, too, because he has the sex appeal of last week's cold rice pudding. No, he thinks that if women stayed at home and looked after the kids, the world would be a better place. You know, no junkies, no punks."
Lotta Bull frowned in concentration.
"No women, eh? Is he one of us? Homo?"
Rosie Hip sat back and laughed until the tears came to her eyes.
"Good gracious, no," she exclaimed. "You've got him all wrong. Anyhow," she said sadly, "the poor guy is stuck now between his bed and his wheelchair."
"Gee, I'd like to meet him," breathed Lotta.
"Not a hope," replied Rosie. "He doesn't meet people anymore. He has had some foul press creeps cook up an absolute swatch of lies about him and misrepresent everything he's said or done, and now he thinks the press is the most evil force in the world. I know the press was the cause of me going to the corrective school," she added reflectively.
"Ah, well," said Lotta Bull, rising to her feet. "Guess we should be going down to the espresso."
End of chapter 4.